The Book Nook on WISO was presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Keith O'Brien. He joins us on the telephone in Texas, where he's enjoying a little break from the blizzard up north. Keith, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here, Vic. Thanks for having me.
Keith, I had you on for your last book, Charlie Hustle, your biography of Pete Rose, the Cincinnati Red idol from our area. And I remember interviewing you for that, and I don't remember you ever mentioning that you were working on this new book. I thought, when I read it, I thought, he's been working on this for years. You kind of kept it a secret, but man, what a book. You've written a biography of Larry Bird.
My new book, Heartland, is really an origin story. You know, it tells the story of the rise of Larry Bird in rural Indiana in the 1970s. The narrative unfolds between roughly 1973 and 1979. Everything else is epilogue. It's really this moment in time that shapes him, that changes him, that forms him, and in fact, I would argue creates him. I think in this little window of time, it's very possible that Larry Bird could have slipped away forever and we might not have ever known his name. And so, you know, I began working on it about 2.5 years ago, sort of in the run-up to the publication of my book on Pete Rose. But I really don't like to talk about, you know, my projects, you know, when I'm working on them. I like to keep it quiet, I guess.
I understand, Keith, because I would have swooped right in and written my terrible biography of Larry Bird and published it before you. I'm just kidding. Has anyone ever written a biography of Larry Bird?
Well, sure. I mean, there have been a couple. Most of these have a couple of flaws, I would argue. You know, a couple of them have been done in conjunction with Larry Bird. And by that, I mean, you know, he seemed to have some editorial control over the project. Others, you know, are, you know, flawed because they approach the story in a way that has often been done. They do the Bird magic narrative, you know, where they have this sing-song narrative bouncing back and forth between Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. And I realize, you know, as a storyteller, why people do it that way. You know, of course, as many listeners will know, Bird and Magic are both going to become Hall of Famers, are both going to become American icons, and they will play against each other in the last college basketball game that both men will ever play, the championship game in March 1979. But, you know, when you tell the story that way, Vic, there's really, you've created two problems. The first is Bird and Magic don't know each other. You know, they've met one time before that game in 1979. They crossed paths for a few days on a college all-star team in the spring of 78. And during that window of time, they barely speak to each other. They're not friends. They're not rivals. They're not anything. And the real problem with that is when you do the Bird Magic narrative, what you've done is diluted, watered down the stories of both men. And I would argue you've specifically watered down the story of Larry Bird, which I believe is one of the great American underdog stories of the past 50 years.
Well, in that respect, he had something in common with Pete Rose, who was kind of a shrimp when he was a kid, and no one expected him to be this amazing baseball star. And the difference between these two books in my mind is that you initially had access to Pete Rose. He did interviews, and then suddenly he just kind of shut you out. And with Larry Bird, not surprisingly, you didn't get any interviews, but you interviewed just about everybody else, didn't you?
I did. You know, I've learned over the years, Vic, as a journalist and as an author, that, you know, of course you want to have access to the subjects about whom you are writing. Of course you do. But you can often get a more accurate picture of the subject by interviewing 12, 15, 25, 100 people around that person than you can by interviewing the person, him or herself. I mean, that was absolutely true with Pete Rhodes. There were certain parts of his narrative that he was able to shed some light on through the interviews and the access that I had to him. But oftentimes he was telling a version of the story that was really just not genuine, not real. It was the story that he wanted to tell. And so what I've done here with Heartland is tell this kaleidoscopic view of this moment in time. And as you know, since you've read the book, you know, Heartland isn't just an origin story of Larry Bird. It's a story of a time, a team, a place. Terre Haute, Indiana, in the 1970s, this Indiana State underdog team in the 1970s, and all of those other subjects, players, Larry Bird's roommates, Larry Bird's coaches, they were all participating with this narrative.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Book Nook. My guest on the phone today, Keith O'Brien. His new biography of Larry Bird is Heartland. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling. I remember that game in 1979. It was an event, 50 million people watching it on NBC. I remember I was working at a record store, and all of us got together at one of their houses, and we all watched the game together. It was that big of a deal, watching Michigan State against Indiana State for everything. And I was not aware when I was watching that game that Larry Bird was hurt. I was shocked when I read your book. I don't remember anybody ever talking about that.
Yeah, so, you know, that game in March 1979 between Bird and Magic, you know, as you noted, it draws this massive television audience. You've got two of the biggest stars in America at that time, Bird and Magic. Bird was undeniably, at the moment, the better player. You know, Bird is finishing a collegiate career in which he's averaging 30 points a game. 30 points a game. He is, you know, in the AP Player of the Year voting that spring. You know, he's going to take home 328 votes to Magic Johnson's 9. But Magic is this ebullient, effusive star, charismatic in front of the cameras even then. And you're right, though. You know, Bird is injured. He has broken his thumb about a week before, and he has exacerbated it in the regional final game that was played right there in Cincinnati that sent Indiana State to the Final Four. So he's wounded, and I do think that matters. You know, his shooting is off that night against Magic. It's not his best performance. I would argue it's probably his worst performance of the season. And I do think the injury had something to do with it. And that is, you know, one of the questions, you know, what if Bird had been healthy in that game? Is the outcome different?
Was that the Arkansas game where a fan ran out and tweaked his thumb after they won?
Yeah. They Arkansas and Indiana State play in the regional final right there in the old Riverfront Coliseum in downtown Cincinnati. That game itself is a sellout and is drawing massive television audience numbers. Indiana State, you know, wins in miracle fashion, beating a team that, frankly, is probably better than them. That Arkansas team starred Sidney Moncrief himself, of course, will become an NBA star. And, you know, in the celebration on the floor after the game, you know, fans stormed the floor. And, you know, I went back in the reporting for this book and unearthed all of the game footage from the 1979 season. I watched every minute of every game. I know, it's crazy. And in the celebration after the game, you can actually see the moment when it happens. This fan comes running next to Bird. He clearly has no nefarious intentions. He just grabs him to sort of, like, celebrate with him. And when he does, you see Bird pull back his left hand almost instinctively, like a knee-jerk reaction, and wince and sort of push this fan away. And that's when it happens.
We have many listeners out there who know who Larry Bird is and was, but we probably have a few out there who don't have any idea who Larry Bird is. Who is Larry Bird?
Well, you know, Larry Bird comes from nowhere, and I think that's important to know. You know, he's from French Lick, Indiana. He plays his high school basketball at Springs Valley High School. Springs Valley is not a basketball powerhouse. It's not a big school. In the history of Indiana basketball, they've only made one run ever. They're not that good when Bird is there. For three seasons at Springs Valley, Larry Bird isn't even the best player on his own team. He is not hotly recruited by colleges until his senior year of high school. And, you know, briefly enrolls at Indiana University to play for Bobby Knight, which, of course, is a huge deal, as many people will know. But he doesn't make it there. He flames out. He hitchhikes home to French Lick within 3 weeks. And in that winter of 74-75, he nearly disappears. And I do think that's important to know. You know, when Bird leaves Indiana in the fall of 74 and hitchhikes home to French Lick, no one is writing stories about him. No one is wondering whither Larry Bird or where will he go next. No one cares. He's gone. He is off the basketball map. And by February 75, Larry Bird is playing pickup basketball in what is essentially a men's league in rural Indiana. He's playing for a team called Hancock Construction in the Industrial League. This is glorified pickup basketball. And is, you know, really in this moment that I would argue that we nearly lose Larry Bird forever. And it may have happened were it not for another sort of down on his luck rural Indiana guy, a guy named Bill Hodges, who is a journeyman assistant coach, moving from team to team, can't hold down a job. And Bill Hodges, in the spring of 75, retired at Indiana State. And just to put it into perspective for listeners, I mean, Indiana State was teetering on the edge of being banished to Division II. It was playing in without a conference. It drew crowds that were smaller than high school basketball teams in Indiana. No one was coming to Indiana State games. And, you know, Bill Hodges gets hired there and drifts down to French Lick looking for Larry Bird. And he really does have to look for him. He drives around French Lick that day trying to find him, mm-hmm. and ultimately does. And in a moment that is rendered, I think, in truly cinematic fashion in the book, you know, Bill Hodges connects with Larry. You know, Bill is from a tiny town in Indiana, just like Larry. He's from Zionsville, Indiana. Bill Hodges knows what it's like to be poor and overlooked. And these two men connect. And it is Bill Hodges who convinces Larry that he should come back to college and specifically attend Indiana State. And that's really where it all turns. I have a really fun tour scheduled for this coming week, beginning on Monday night in Terre Haute. You know, they invited me to do the launch of the book in Terre Haute on Monday, March 2nd. That was super exciting. And I said, listen, I'd love to do that, but I'd love to do it in conversation with the people who lived it, you know, the people who were on this team. And on Monday night this week, roughly 10 members of that team, including Bill Hodges, are going to be with me on a stage at the convention center. You know, I've been fortunate, Vic, to write a number of books and have a number of book tours. I've had some great events. I've never done anything like we're going to do on Monday night in Terre Haute, you know, on stage with the people who lived it.
When you talked about this event in Terre Haute, I actually got chills thinking about that event and what that's going to be like for you. Wow, that's just so thrilling. Okay, here's his itinerary a little closer here to Yellow Springs. On Friday, March 6th, as you mentioned, you're going to be at the Campbell County Public Library in Newport, Kentucky. That's 1000 Highland Avenue from 7 until 9 o'clock that evening. Kind of a homecoming for you across the river there from your hometown. And then you've got a couple of events on Saturday, March 7th. You're going to be at the Blue Couch Bookshop That's 1445 Grandview Avenue in Columbus from 1 until 2:30. Then I guess you're going to be probably speeding down the highway to get down to Joseph Beth Booksellers that evening for an event from 5 until 7. That's in Cincinnati at 2692 Madison Road. So don't get a ticket, Keith.
I will not. I will drive the speed limit, I promise.
Okay. Wow, I learned a lot in this book, and I thought I knew stuff about Larry Bird. For one thing, I kind of guessed that he didn't like talking to the press, and that finally changed over his career. But, man, this guy, he did not like talking about anything except basketball because his private life was private.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a couple things going on there. You know, for the reporting, for the book, I spent a good bit of time in French Lick. And, you know, I urge people, if you haven't seen it, if you haven't been there, you know, look at French Lick on a map. It's a remote place, you know, where there's no direct way to get there. You know, and it certainly was a very insular place in the 1970s, you know, when Larry Bird was growing up. You know, a lot of people in French Lick are a bit like Bird. They're guarded, you know, when it comes to outsiders. And so I think Bird had that. You know, number two, Bird, you know, in those days anyway, Vic, you know, he's a young man. He's come out of this troubled childhood. He was a sensitive guy. Mm-hmm. And, one little thing could get him to shut down. Seemingly insignificant things could rub him the wrong way. So I think that was a factor as well. But I think the biggest thing really is that, you know, Larry was a private person, is a private person. And in those days in particular, you know, with all of that background I just mentioned, you know, he was sort of keeping secrets about his past. And I want to be clear, unlike Pete Rose, who, you know, I wrote about last, you know, none of these secrets are nefarious or bad. Some of these secrets have nothing to do with Bird himself. Mm. You know, Pete Rose was keeping real secrets and lying about them. That is not the Larry Bird story, not anywhere close. You know, but Bird was, you know, didn't like to talk about, you know, his father and his father's suicide in the winter of 75. You know, he didn't like to talk about his failed marriage to a high school sweetheart. And he didn't like to talk about a daughter that he had with that sweetheart during that very brief marriage. So he's keeping in secrets. He is a private person. He is a sensitive person. And, and suddenly, Vic, he shows up at Indiana State. And initially, the national media has no interest in him. You know, He's playing at this small school, like I said, on the fringe of the void of college basketball. No one cared. But by the end of his first season there, that was beginning to change. And by the start of his second season, the national media did care. Mm. And now Sports Illustrated is sending, you know, some of its biggest writers to Terre Haute to write profiles on him. And you know, anyone who grew up in the 70s and 80s knows how important Sports Illustrated was. It was the sports Bible. It was the arbiter of truth. You know, people, young athletes wanted to be on the cover of that magazine. Larry Bird did not. And he really didn't want to tell, you know, his backstory. And from the moment the national media begins to show up, Larry Bird shuts down. And he really will, for the next couple of years, almost be at war with the national media.
My guest is Keith O'Brien. The book is Heartland. It's the story of Larry Bird. And I learned so much from this book. I was not aware until I read your book. I guess it was in the back of my mind, but you confirmed it for me, how Larry Bird transformed not only the NCAA tournament, but also NBA basketball. Basketball on TV really wasn't that big of a deal until Larry Bird came along. And they also considered him, some people, to be the great white hope. And I'm struck by the parallels now between a Larry Bird and a Caitlin Clark. and how she's transformed women's basketball in college and now in the pros.
Yeah, I don't think you can underestimate how important Larry's race, Larry's whiteness was to his stardom in 78-79. And obviously, I want to be clear, Larry was an incredible talent. He is, in my opinion, one of the greatest college basketball players who's ever stepped on the court, you know, full stop. But it did matter that he was a white talent. And in 78-79, you know, the media, NBA general managers, even network executives at the major, television stations, talked about that out loud. You know, they knew that it was critical, it was crucial, you know, that Larry was a white player, and again would speak of that out loud. And NCAA basketball was growing throughout the 70s. You know, it's almost like Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, you know, caught the wave at the right time. They didn't create the wave. But when Bird and Magic show up, the two of them together, and specifically Larry, because of his race, really do amplify the moment. And then, you know, the two of them together entering the NBA at the same time really do save the league. You know, this has been written about over the years, but the details here are stunning. I mean, the NBA Finals, even after Bird and Magic are in the league in 80, 81, in those years, the NBA Finals are being aired in tape delay in many markets. I mean, when Larry Bird wins his first NBA title in 1981, most Americans do not see it. It is just not being watched. And in most markets, it's being played, you know, at 11 p.m. or 11:30 p.m. after the local news. I mean, no one's watching. And so it is really the arrival of these two obvious greats that begins the transformation of the league. And then, you know, I think we do have to give credit to a young executive and soon-to-be commissioner of the NBA in the 1980s, a man named David Stern, who will go on to become commissioner for a long, long time. You know, in those early 80s, Stern is a savvy businessman. He leverages his young stars, putting them in the spotlight, creates commercials around these young stars. Make sure, by the way, that in these commercials, white stars beyond Larry Bird are featured, even if they aren't truly stars. And all of this really does save the league. And by the time that, you know, Michael Jordan is drafted, you know, it is sort of set up for success.
Well, I've got to admit that I didn't really follow the NBA until the Celtics had players like Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale and Larry Bird. And man, those Larry Bird's passing. If you watch a highlight reel of Larry Bird, those no-look passes, man, it's just unbelievable how he could pass.
And he was doing it in college. I mean, like I said, I watched every minute of every game of the 1978-79 season, this miracle season for Larry Bird's Indiana State team. And the passes he is making, you know, on the floor as a college senior are just stunning. You know, 60-foot passes behind his back, you know, 50-foot passes while laying on the floor, hitting a streaking teammate down the court for an easy two. I mean, this was the kind of vision he had on the floor, and he could do it with both hands, left or right. He was a truly one-of-one talent.
I grew up in Des Moines and had the pleasure as a little kid of following Maury John's Drake Bulldogs. And I was stunned. Of course, Indiana State went into the Missouri Valley Conference eventually to read your book. And you mentioned my favorite player when I was a little kid, Bob Nedelecki. I couldn't believe it. I was like, Bob Nedelecki's in here.
Yeah, Bob Nedelecki, who will go on to a career with the Indiana Pacers. Yeah, you know, as I said, you know, this is a real origin story of Larry Bird. You know, the book lives in Indiana. The narrative lives in Indiana, you know, between 73 and 79. You know, and Bob Nedelecki, you know, was a star in Indiana in those years and does cross paths with Bird and others. In this narrative, in that little window of time.
I love that. Let me give our listeners your signing information once more, because I'm sure some of them are going to want to come out and see you. The book is just coming out. It's Heartland by Keith O'Brien, the story of Larry Bird, A Forgotten Place, An Impossible Dream, and the miracle of Larry Bird. And he's going to be, as you mentioned, in Terre Haute on Monday for the rollout, and then coming up next week, he's got an event at the Campbell County Public Library, 7 to 9 p.m. That's 1000 Highland Avenue, Newport, Kentucky. And then he'll be in Columbus on Saturday afternoon, March 7th, at the Blue Couch Bookshop, 1 o'clock to 2:30. And then he's going to be heading back over to his hometown of Cincinnati. He'll be there the evening of Saturday, March 7th, at Joseph Beth Booksellers from 5 until 7 o'clock. That's 2692 Madison Road in Cincinnati. And I know you're probably working on another book, but I'm not going to ask you about it, Keith, because I know better.
Yeah, you know, I think it's just the Irishman in me, Vic. I hate to talk about things until I know they're real, until I know it's happening. Maybe it's just Murphy's Law, but I like to just keep the literary gods at bay until the book is mostly wrapped.
Well, these last two books just knocked me out. The book about Pete Rose, Charlie Hustle, and this one, Heartland, by Keith O'Brien. And I really appreciate you being back on the program, and I hope you have a good time in Terre Haute.
Oh, thank you so much, Vic. It was a pleasure to be back with you.
And the next time I'm in French Lick, staying at the spa, I'll be thinking of you.
I love it.
What, wasn't that like a big spa town at one point?
It was. You know, people in the 1920s and 30s before the crash, the stock market crash, you know, ascribed medicinal values to the spring water that was natural to Orange County, Indiana, and specifically could be found in West Baden Springs and French Lick, Indiana. And a couple of hotels popped up there that were, you know, huge attractions in the 1920s and 30s. But with the crash and the depression, all of that went away. And, you know, the era that Bird grows up in the 70s is wildly different, far more impoverished. But if you return to French Lick today, as I did many times, you know, those hotels are back. Mm. And tourism has returned to French Lick.
And we can thank Larry Bird for that. Thanks again for your time, Keith.
Great to be with you.
You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. The book is Heartland. It's just coming out by Keith O'Brien, the story of Larry Bird. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.